This is an interview with Governor Victor Urrutia. This is tape 48, side 2. Well, when the vote finally came on Senate Bill 100, you voted with, along with Ted Halleck and Stafford Hansel and Hector McPherson.
Well, Stafford was in the House.
Oh, that's right.
With Hector in the Senate, yes.
And Hector. And John Burns voted against it, isn't that right?
I think so.
And I can't remember the other people on the committee, but...
Well, it was Mike Thorne. He mentioned Mike Thorne and John Burns.
Right.
Hector, Ted, myself. That's five. There were more than five. Mm-hmm. I recall the rest of the committee.
Right.
But I have some real strong feelings about land use planning and how you go about it. We're talking about wasting land. Out Clackamas County, they'll let you build a house in certain areas. It has to be on 20 acres.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't understand that. You know, that doesn't make any sense to me at all. What it really makes sense, because we have to preserve space for housing. We have to make it as efficient as we can, because Oregon's going to grow. And if you use up land like that, all of a sudden you don't have any place to build a house. And that puts pressure then on the farmland,
mm-hmm.
You know, political pressure on that farmland. Mm-hmm. You want to keep that pressure off. And so those kinds of things don't make any sense to me at all. In Richmond and Smothers would agree. They call farmland something that is absolutely not farmland. I can recall vividly driving out by between Bend and Redmond, and the county commissioner out there was saying, LCDC mm-hmm. says this is farmland. I am not a farmer. I know that's not farmland. I mean, you can see rocks all over the place. That's not farmland. And so you see, that doesn't make common sense. It's acceptable to people. Farmland, yeah, we need to preserve that. You know, the people, I'll be back just a little bit. I don't care what law you write, unless the people find it acceptable, it won't work. Even if it's a law, it won't work. And so you try to make it acceptable and it gives you the common sense of most people, then it'll work. And those are the kinds of things we weren't ready for. We passed Senate Bill 100 and said, okay, cities and counties, you're going to have to plan, land use plan, different zone. And it has to match the statewide goals. There weren't that many planners in the United States, you know, qualified planners. I know of one young man, a very bright young man. He was a planner for one of the counties. He had no background in planning at all. But you had to get a planner.
Mm-hmm.
Those kinds of things. That doesn't mean you don't do it. That doesn't mean you shouldn't have it. And I believe in it. But I met with LCDC a number of times. The people, the planners in the agency that were acknowledging plans.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't write my message, but my message was, look, when you put that felt pen down, green or red or yellow or whatever, there are people under there.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't want to be bothered with people. People are getting under the way of doing what should, in their mind should be done. You got to understand there's people under there.
Mm-hmm.
I thought to myself a number of times, in spite of everything I'm telling you, you know, I'm supportive of, I don't want to get rid of it, I think we ought to have it. But there has to be some recognition. I live in an area called Broadmoor. Broadmoor has, restrictions. When it was developed, its restrictions are applied there in Washington County for what you can do in my neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't make a nickel's worth of contribution to land use planning. When land use planning didn't, you know, whatever they did didn't affect me one nickel's worth. But there was farmers in Washington County. In their mind, they were getting old, the kids didn't want to farm. Okay, and there's subdivision coming. This is my deposit in the bank. When I try to decide I want to retire, I'll retire, sell the property, and that's my retirement fund. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden we said, no, wait a minute, we're taking half of your bank account. They made a huge contribution to land use planning. I didn't make any contribution to land use planning. Mm-hmm. I'm using that as a comparison. There's mm-hmm. all in between.
Sure.
And so you have to understand, you know, what you're doing, at least be sensitive to what you're doing. Back to when you put that pen down, there's real live human beings underneath that felt pen. Mm-hmm. And I try to get them to think in terms like that. Not to back off. Just understand. When I talk about size of lots, I walk around our residence in Salem. There are houses in back, homes in back of homes. In back. And people are perfectly happy. They like where they are. They are not psychotic. and you know, so what's the problem? You know, you create space for homes. Mm-hmm. And don't waste it. We need it. I don't want to apply pressures where pressures ought not to apply. Just saying that I have this little thing I've acquired, or you know, things I saved over the years. I call it wit, wisdom, and whimsy. And in there it says, when you don't need it, zoning works. When it's essential, doesn't work at all. I'll get the most quote. I mean, see, when the pressure's on, it doesn't work. So, you know, when I see a statement that I'm opposed to it, in my letter I said, you know, if he says that I didn't go along with everything that he wanted, then yeah, he's right. I wouldn't disagree with that. If he said that I wouldn't buy this bill as it put down lock, stock, and barrel, he'd be right about that, because I didn't. But to say that I was against land use planning, that's not true at all.
The other people that were on that committee were, aside from the ones we've mentioned, Halleck, Atiyah, McPherson, Thorne, and Burns were Ripper and Wingard.
Oh, okay.
George Wingard, I presume, voted for it.
Well, yeah, well, he was the Halleck, McPherson.
Right.
Whatever you say is okay with me, boss.
And would Ripper have voted against it?
Ripper basically was against it, but I think he was finally a supporter, uh-huh. and sort of a swing on it, but he was pretty quiet. I was, well, as I always was on any committee, you know, I participated. It's interesting, I'll tell you another story. Senator Jackson of Washington had a bill for a national language plan.
Yes, I was going to ask you about that.
And so we went back, and was Tom McCall and me. We went back to Washington, D.C. to testify before the committee. I was asked to go back by the National Legislative Association, I don't know the name of this, because all you had it, and I was to appear as a legislator. Tom McCall went back. He was the star. He was on early. I was on late. I was worried about catching my plane to go back home. But the interesting story was that we were there, and Tom McCall, who now is the champion, said to me, I'm sending Bill 100. I said, no, Tom, this is. But Senate Bill 100, I said, no. I'm briefing him on Senate Bill 100 in the Capitol bill, in the Capitol bill. While he's getting ready to testify on behalf of the bill.
Is this another example of your being misunderstood by...
He was the champion.
He was the champion, yeah. And how did you feel about the national bill?
Well...
Was this going to be controlled by a national body?
Well, my testimony, I don't remember exactly, but I'm sure I know involved it, that I think it's a good idea. I think every area of the United States should have this, but you leave the actual planning to the local level,
right,
kind of thing.
Local being
city, county.
But not necessarily state.
Well, certainly the pattern that Oregon had was we established goals, and then any planning has to match the goal.
Right.
It does mean you have to do, you have to zone my lot by something, but it means that the principles of that goal have to be matched by the actual zoning.
And that bill was not passed, of course.
It didn't go anywhere. No, but there was a big show. Mm. I was really worried about getting my plane to go back home, you know, because I'm on in the afternoon after all the TV people left listening to Tom. And I think there was a governor from Colorado, a very popular governor. Anyway, they were the stars.
This is what year?
Oh, goodness. I don't remember.
Before you were elected?
Oh, yeah, before I was elected governor. I was state senator and Tom was governor.
Oh, Tom was governor at the time.
Tom was governor.
So it would have been.
Well, he was governor. I have to figure it out for a minute.
Until 75, so.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, through 75.
Through 75. Well, to the beginning of 75. He was.
That's right. Wait a minute.
Because Straub would have been elected in 74 till 78, and then you were.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. So it would be before 74. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, going on to another burning issue this session, there was a bill calling for the annual sessions of the legislature. I don't know if we've talked about this or not, but
no. I don't recall we did. I opposed that vigorously. Mm-hmm. There's no need for annual sessions. There is a need for a competent electorate. Pick competent legislators, but there's no need for an annual session.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What about reducing the length of sessions?
That is also cosmetic. Uh-huh. Washington has limited sessions, but they always have this. What happens over there is that they adjourn, and then the next morning the governor calls a special session.
Right.
I mean, you're fooling yourself. Mm-hmm.
So what is the best way of dealing with that situation?
Well, of course, the best way is the electorate to make the right decisions when they pick people for office. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. I think that's an unachievable dream. To dream the impossible dream. But the problem, basically, is that the people are going down there. It isn't really that this is more complicated, because it really isn't. What's occurring is that you have legislators that are used to making decisions. Mm-hmm. They have no background to make decisions. This is not being mean to them. That just happens to be the way it is. And so they take longer to make decisions. Or oftentimes because they're running for re-election, really don't want to make a decision, put it off as long as they can. And that's what's happened. When I was first down there, I mean, there were decisions made. Mm-hmm. And, you know, oftentimes a lot of people would get really upset about it, but there was a decision made. And the sessions were running nearly that long. So that's, you know, you can't reinvent it. Another impediment is single-member districts.
Right.
And I think we have talked about because
yeah.
It became very provincial. Mm-hmm. That's an impediment. That's a divisive thing. Mm-hmm. By that I mean to divide the body up between urban and rurals or whatever. I think I mentioned earlier that I represent all of Washington County, which had the very urbanized east side. My district became Geiger, Beaverton, or parts of Beaverton, you know, the east side of the county, all urban. So obviously that person represents urban people, and that's the way that person would mm-hmm. vote. It was an impediment. But the question, what can you do about it? It's not something Well, you're not going to solve it with annual sessions, right? Because these same people are going to be there indecisive. So what are they going to do every year? They're going to do the same thing every year that they did before.
There was another concept here which was defeated, which I don't understand at all. It was using coupons instead of dollars for some political contributions. I'd never heard of such a thing. Do you know what that was about? It was defeated.
Sounds like a warrant system of some kind.
A what?
Warrant system, paper.
Uh-huh.
Instead of money. I don't remember that.
It seems so odd that I can't imagine. There must. I didn't have any more information on it, but I thought maybe.
I can't help you.
Okay. Well then, going on to some of the other issues that at the end of that session, you urged removal of a law prohibiting public officials from receiving gifts over $100, a feeling that all should be reported, all gifts should be reported, and we have talked about this before. Was there anything else that came up during the session?
Well, they constantly came across to the checkoff. Off of your taxes for contribution to political parties.
Right.
We talked about that too. I don't believe public funding is a political campaigns.
And you said that you would support a program restoring aid to two-parent families, but only for 6 months, not a full year, and we did talk about that. Was there anything else on that? And you signed a bill, I don't know whether you talked about this or not, you signed a bill for the country's first state-run wine cellar? You signed a bill for the country's first state-run wine cellar?
Oh.
You know that was where...
Yeah, this was to help the
wine industry?
The growing wine industry, yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And it was just for bottles for when you had state dinners and things like that.
I don't even know where that cellar is. If it even exists, I have no idea.
And then you had a, then there was some reaction to President Reagan's proposal for federal tax reform. Charlie Hales from the Home Builders Association would eliminate future sales by the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs and Commerce Department. He said that the program treats those bonds not as tax exempt and therefore taxable like other investments. And most worrisome is the proposal that the state and local taxes not be deductible from federal taxes, telling people that property taxes are a discretionary purchase, and cutting more people from out of the housing market that would force owners of rental housing to boost rents by about 20% to 30%. Where did you come down on that issue? Do you recall?
I followed you for a little bit. You better read that to me again. About Charlie Hales.
Yeah, Charlie Hales, who was president of the Home Builders Association at the time, would eliminate future sales by the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs and the Commerce Department. He said that the program treats those bonds as not as tax exempt and therefore taxable like any other investment.
Is that what he's proposing, or is that what he's saying what it was? Veteran bonds are tax exempt. I know that.
But the wasn't the federal government going to change that?
Oh, you mean to make them non-tax exempt?
Yeah, the President Reagan's...
Okay, yeah, go ahead. Okay.
And he was concerned that the state and local taxes might not be deductible from federal taxes.
Okay. Now I follow you. That this is the whole thing was an incentive to have low interest loans. That's what being tax deductible are. The deduction for your property taxes. Same thing now, made it possible to acquire homes, and I would agree with that. And the federal law really was not conducive for that.
Kelly, Kevin Kelly, who was the Oregon Business Forecast Panel on that said, we are a high income tax state, and this would mean no break for state and local income taxes or property taxes on second homes. But this was, I didn't have your view on that, down here.
If the question was second homes, then that was a matter of, you know, whether or not to have that as a deductible expense. And thinking that would be either recreational, you don't really need that one, or you were renting it and getting money back from it. And I have no problem with that. The interest of the state is really to help people own a home, not homes, plural. And I think that's an appropriate goal for the state, to do everything you can to make homeownership possible.
Another concern was raised by Reverend Rodney Page from the Ecumenical Ministries. And he deplored Reagan's failure to authorize deductions for charitable organizations by taxpayers who do not itemize their returns. He felt that while the president is telling the private sector of the economy that government will be less for poor people, the plan makes it less attractive to donate. In other words, he wanted there to be charitable deductions for all tax returns.
Yeah, well, that's standard deduction. We talked about that.
Yeah.
And I do think that's unfair, the standard deduction. That's making a presumption that people are making a contribution. And probably, I don't know this for a fact, but I have to guess that those that take a standard deduction, I bet you a very large percentage make no charitable contribution at all, and yet they get credit for it.
Right.
In a standard deduction. So in this case, I don't think that would prevent anybody from giving. They might say, I won't give, but they don't give anyway.
What was your feeling in general about President Reagan's tax reform?
Well, from everything, I don't remember it that well, but from everything you're saying, I would generally oppose it.
Another issue that came up, which was kind of interesting, it happened around the state in different spots. In Eastern Oregon, Neil Doc Werner, recently chosen to head the Ship of State of Eastern Oregon.
Oh, yeah.
An independent state of mind, according to the news, the new state official, challenged you to a porcupine race during the annual Miners' Jubilee celebration, which you turned down.
But he may have been deadly serious. I didn't take it quite that seriously. There was a state of Jefferson.
Right. I was going to ask you about that, too.
Harry Boyven was the governor of that state.
Right.
And that for many years has been the talk about, even in Northern California.
Right.
The Southern Oregon, Northern California was a state. I think out in Eastern Oregon, they were just going to have a state all by themselves. I don't think they were going to join with Idaho, I'm not sure. But that's just the general, sometimes they laugh about it, but I think there's some deadly seriousness in their thinking that they really feel isolated from most populous part of the state. A lot of complaints, we talked about land use planning. You know, they'd say, that's fine for Portland, Oregon, but why do we have to be so sophisticated and fossil? And I can understand that. So, you know, that's how this agitation happens. This is not new. This has been going on certainly since 1859.
But do you think that it's getting any worse nowadays?
No, it crops up from time to time. I think the latest cropping up was in Northern California.
Right.
Not necessarily in Southern Oregon.
Well, they're still looking at possibly seceding from the rest of California, aren't they?
Northern California is more serious about it right now, at least from what I read. But this is not going to go away, and it's going to continue. And, you know, you've got all these big gorillas of Los Angeles and some of the, you know, so the people up in Northern California figure, hey, we've got nothing in common with those people. And they don't. They really don't. And, you know, the people in Southern Oregon, although Southern Oregon now with Medford is a pretty large community, Roseburg, Medford. But they just feel like, you know, you guys don't understand us. And in most cases, that's true. I've used the word prescription, and I really believe it. The people in, let's say, Eastern Oregon, I even where they got their head screwed on a little bit, they got some real common sense, you know. And we get over here and we get all these great ideas, you know, that really don't make any sense at all. And yet you got most of the votes out here, coming forth with these things that don't make any sense at all.
How did you try to mitigate that as governor?
It's awfully hard. You work the best you can. That's part of why I was so proud of traveling about a quarter of a million miles inside of Oregon. I kept going. And I kept going. And part of it was just to make them feel that somebody does care.
Mm-hmm.
But still, you can't overcome it all together, no matter what you do.
All right.
Well, you, by this time, had vetoed more, and we talked about this a little bit, vetoed more bills than anyone except Oz West back in the
1900s.
In the early 1900s.
Well, I vetoed more than he did. He vetoed more one session than I did.
Yeah. He vetoed like 40% or something like that, didn't he?
He vetoed a third. About a third of all the bills passed, and then the bills passed for a little over 200. So that was quite an enormous record. I always claim now that mine is the modern day record. I accumulated, I'm not sure I put it on the tape, I counted the vetoes of Governor Holmes, Governor Hatfield, Governor McCall, Governor Straub, and they vetoed 112 bills. I vetoed 108, four less than those four governors.